On today's episode, authentic communication, mindfulness, and much more.
Are you a leader trying to get more from your business and life?
Me too.
So join me as I document the conversations, stories, and advice to help you achieve what matters in your life. Welcome to Unbound with me, Chris Dubois.
Gabe DeRita is a life coach who left a tech career to travel the world by bicycle and discover his calling in coaching and authentic relating. Gabe helps leaders align values with goals and facilitates trainings on authentic communication, mindfulness, and psychedelics for transformation. A goal whisperer and mushroom nerd, Gabe weaves neuroscience, ikigai, and a passion for foraging into his work empowering individuals and teams. Gabe, welcome to Unbound.
Chris, thanks for having me. It's been a long time coming. I think we started this conversation like in October of last year, right? Now we're recording
it
in
is.
January. So very excited.
Right. Finally able to connect.
Indeed.
So I am looking forward to you sharing your origin story with everybody.
Yeah. I guess I'll do the origin story that is about this chapter of my life, right? I'm not going to go way back to like the roots in Philadelphia, but more about how did I get here? You know, how did I get to the place I am with that bio you just read? And for me, it really started with that tech career, with this life that I thought I was supposed to want. Ever since I was young, I thought, you know, just be successful and work hard and you'll get where you need to go. And I kind of had the blinders on for most of my 20s, just sort of grinding it out, and realized in my late 20s, just had this experience of being deeply unhappy with my life and not really knowing why, because I was checking all the boxes. You know, I had the six-figure job and the off-street parking and, you know, washer dryer in unit in my condo. And I'm like, what's missing here? And I now call it spiritual inflammation, which is something that I do a lot of with my clients in identity work, is finding out, like, are you having this allergic reaction to your daily life? And are you really looking for the places that you're out of alignment with some deeper calling? And that was kind of the beginning of the end for me of that chapter of my life, where I really kind of took everything part brick by brick, left the job, left the partner, left the group of friends and the community I built in California, and moved on to my bicycle. And I traveled for almost 2 years by myself. I rode my bike for about 9 months of that, like living outside and just kind of going around and really looking for a way to connect with that deeper calling and meaning. And so I didn't know it at the time, but that's kind of the classic archetype of the hero's journey, right? Like, boy leaves home, finds soul, blah, blah, blah. It's like eat, pray, love kind of script. I didn't know that at the time. I just knew something was wrong. I just knew that I needed to address it, because if I said no to myself again, I might not get the opportunity to ever say yes.
Man, so you, you were like Forrest Gumping.
And that wasn't just by design. Bike. You know, I was just trying to change the way I felt about my day-to-day existence. And I knew that traveling by bike was something I had dreamed about since I was like in my early 20s. I love bicycles. It's one of my great passions. And the opportunity to see the world by bike is like, it's a different way of being. You're just in this perpetual intimacy with your surroundings, and you're really getting a chance to live in the moment in a way that our, you know, modern office culture and kind of hustle culture, it's like the antithesis of that. You can't plan too far ahead. You have to just really respond to what's in front of you.
Right. I think that was one of the biggest pieces I took away from, was it Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance?
Yeah.
Not sure if you're familiar with the book, but, great read for traveling the country in a motorcycle, which I'm assuming is pretty close to being on a bicycle, except you're putting in a little more effort on your bike.
Yeah.
But it's like taking in your surroundings, actually being able to respond to what's around you, because there's no walls. And it is a completely different way of seeing things. But I want to go into some of your coaching now. So you work with a lot of tech professionals, you got a background there, so you're able to, you know, relate to these people and help them see where, you know, some of these issues that they're probably struggling with. What are some of those patterns you see in their journeys towards more purposeful work?
Are you asking me in terms of the individual or in terms of the organization?
I would say the individual for now.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that I see leaders struggle with, particularly in tech, is like, it's all moving so fast that people never really slow down to deeply understand their own process in a way. And they're taking on a lot of things that aren't theirs. So people are tending to take on values or ways of making meaning or ways of doing business that don't really represent who they are, who that deeper like character quality is. And when you give people the space to slow down and figure that out, then they're actually more effective leaders. There's some research on this from the Stanford School of Business. They talk about, I think 75% of their graduates say that self-awareness is the number one quality that leaders lack. And when you lack self-awareness as a leader at any level, right? Individually as a leader in your own life, or if you manage a team in a Fortune 500 company, it doesn't matter. If you lack that individual awareness of like, what are your strengths? What are your triggers? What are the things that are important to you and the way you make meaning in the world? If you don't slow down enough to build that foundation for yourself and really weed out the parts that have been implanted from the world that you're in, then you're always going to kind of feel like an imposter. You're always going to be in that kind of defensive posture. You're always going to be looking over your shoulder a little bit. And that's a lot of the work I do, is giving people that core identity back to themselves a little bit, really taking the time to understand, like, who am I? What is all of this for? How does that align with the mission of the organization I'm involved in? And if it doesn't, do I need to change it up? I think that's a big foundational element of it.
Yeah, I agree entirely. Self-awareness last year was like the year for me figuring out some of the self-awareness stuff. I didn't take a bike trip or anything exciting. I noticed, man, it's like, it was a struggle. Like it's a lot of work to figure out yourself. Right. And to just understand these parts of yourself that someone else could probably pretty easily call out.
Yeah.
Right. Because they notice it from outside. What are some of the things you're doing to help people actually become more self-aware?
Well, you mentioned that you're doing this work yourself, right? So you know how unglamorous and often humiliating it is. And it's not, a process that a lot of people say they want it. Everybody's like, I want to be more authentic. I want to live more aligned. And then when they actually start doing it, they're like, this is deeply uncomfortable. Right. And that's okay. A lot of times it does involve getting perspectives from others. So a 360 is a big part of it, right? If you have a chance for peers to share feedback with you in an anonymous, unbiased way, just getting that data at the outset is really helpful. In an organizational context anyway, a lot of times that's part of the process. We'll actually get some perspectives from the people around you. Like, what do they think? And where are those gaps between how you see yourself and how others see you? I also do a lot of work around really diving into the system of values that people have in their lives. And like, do they have a sense of personal purpose and meaning? You know, do they have a clear like statement like you had on your whiteboard? You have these goals you mentioned on your whiteboard before we started our call. Do you also have something that's like kind of the meaning or the for the sake of what in your life? I really like that question from Richard Strozzi Heckler. He says, for the sake of what? You know, if I said like, what is Chris Dubois for the sake of, right? Would you have an answer to that? Would it be for your family? Would it be to make the world a better place? You know, would it be, what are these deeper parts of you and what are they for? That's where we kind of start. And what parts of your identity are inherited from your culture, and what parts of your identity are you cultivating despite the pressure to be a certain way in your life? Are you playing any roles? And are the roles that you're being asked to play actually a proxy for a deeper sense of selfhood, right? Where like maybe you're just being asked to be the role of a father in the traditional mold of your family's father history, but that's not necessarily authentic to who you want to be as a dad, right? And so is the role you're being asked to play aligned with who you really want to be? Those type of questions are often hard to answer because you might find some important blank spaces or some places where you really are living out of alignment. And I mean, I've had clients upend their lives as a result of this, like changing careers, leaving a master's program, getting a divorce, right? Like really one client even transitioned through a gender identity in our work together because they realized who they wanted to be was different than who they were represented as in their like previous history. So there's a lot of stuff at the root here, and it can get murky quick.
Yeah. So I don't know that I would have the ability to just pull out what I'm, you know, for the sake of what that is for me. But it is crazy doing the work. You can start to see some of these things, which I'm sure you get to see now on mass, right? Just like with everyone you're working with. And it probably becomes more clear how to kind of pull some of those, insights. Like you're giving people like little epiphanies, right? By asking the right questions, getting them to just think deeper about themselves and become more introspective. Are there some like daily practices, I guess, or things that you're kind of going through with your clients to help them just keep reinforcing the ability to become, I guess, more introspective and work through those things?
Yeah. I don't know that there are universally applicable practices because everybody's mm-hmm. so different, but there are a couple things that everybody goes through. You know, the first is really looking at the process through the right lens, and that's seeing it as a process of excavation, not construction. A lot of people think that like leadership development or personal growth involves building all of these systems, and there is validity to that, right? Like the atomic habits methodology or the, you know, 1% better methodology, like all those things, they build up. But my process starts with kind of digging down and uncovering some of those core foundational elements first. And it's kind of a different direction of travel. But I think once you have that solid foundation, once you're really climbing the right mountain towards like an aligned goal, then all the other stuff, there's more momentum and wind in the sail there to keep you going towards those objectives, the things that you want to build on top of that solid foundation of that sense of self, mm-hmm. of that authentic self, of that core self. And so I think that's something that I see a lot, is people want to create new systems, they want to change habits or build stuff. And the first step is actually slowing down and excavating first. I think another piece that comes up a lot is catching ourselves like in that moment of self-awareness, when we recognize that we've made a mistake or we're out of alignment with a purpose or we're not honoring a commitment we made to ourselves. Instead of beating ourselves up and dragging ourselves, you know, over the coals for it, just recognize it as an opportunity to interrupt the pattern. I learned this in my meditation. Like if you notice my meditation practice, it's like my focus is not on my breath. I'm thinking about my to-do list. I used to punish myself for that. I'm a terrible meditator. Oh gosh, why can't I get my mind under control? Now I'm like, oh, good. I caught my attention wandering again. Now I have a choice to bring it back. And it's the same with changing something for the better in your life. You're going to start to notice, especially at the beginning, all the ways that you're out of alignment. It's going to get worse before it gets better. And that's actually good because you're moving from, it's a 0 to 1 moment. You're moving from ignorance to awareness of something that you want to change instead of just being on autopilot. And that's something that people don't necessarily think of that as growth, but that's what actual increased self-awareness is. It's an awareness of all of the moments where we are out of alignment, even if it feels uncomfortable to notice. And it's really important to give ourselves grace in those moments to say, this is a positive thing. This is an element of improvement, not, oh, something else I get to punish myself for.
Right. Yeah. That has been a mindset shift for myself over the past couple of months. Yeah, it is. Something I've been doing too, just a moment of presence to like, just not to like, it gets hard to find 15 minutes every day, right, to meditate and stuff, unless you get it on the calendar and make sure you're doing it. But I can sit here for a second, take a sip of my coffee and just like be present in that moment and take in everything right around me. And I find doing that for that one quick moment, it starts making me do it more throughout the day, right? The first time my kids hug me when I come in and stuff, it's like just taking that second to be like, okay, here I'm here. Like, this is good.
I call that practice savoring. Savoring. Mm-hmm. So you're just like, you're taking a moment to like sip that tea. You're taking a moment to just like feel that hug. You're taking a moment to be fully present with what's happening. But when you add this layer of savoring, it's also an appreciation of what's happening. So it's not a neutral observation. Right. It's an engagement with it at an emotional level that makes it a little bit stickier. And that's the practice that I do. And that's the practice I encourage clients. It's just like that moment to moment awareness. And then what is there to savor about this? Like right now, I'm really appreciating the light outside my window. It's gray. It's a snowy day, but there's this like calm blanket sitting over the mountains and it's really regulating. So things like that.
No, actually, I love that reframing because even taking end of a workout, right? You're panting, you're sweaty, everything hurts. But like, if you savor that moment, like it completely shifts everything you just went through. Like you now can have like a positive emotion and now even build up a positive habit because of that.
Yeah.
I like that difference, but let's go into some of, I guess, the self-limiting stories that people are telling themselves, especially as like, you're probably working with a lot of leaders, right? Who are, they're trying to learn more about themselves so they can show up better and they can help more people and they can run their business better. They have these stories that they're telling themselves that are going to lead to imposter syndrome or are having them take on a persona that really isn't them. How do you kind of help them work to, I guess, be more authentic to their teams in a way that's not going to completely kill their credibility, right? Maybe they had that persona of a certain leader and they don't want to just do a complete 180 and now have everybody being like, okay, we have no idea what's happening with Bill. You know, they want to know, like, have some faith that things are going to keep moving forward and that you're doing the right things, like you're growing. But at the same time, attacking those stories to make sure that you are actually growing and doing the things that'll help everybody. That was a really long-winded way to ask, what are you doing with your clients that are running companies or running teams and like helping them to actually become more authentic with themselves as they do it?
Yeah, I think implicit in the first way that you framed that was the idea that somehow being more authentic would mean you needed to change the script on who you are as a leader or that it would change the way you do business. And I think that's a total myth. And if you are that type of leader, if you're the type of person who's like absolutely one way at work and absolutely somebody else the rest of the time, I got to warn you, that's not going to last forever. It's an unsustainable way to live your life. And I have a somewhat subversive belief that work-life balance doesn't exist in one very important respect. And that's, we shouldn't be balancing the person we are at work with the person we are in the rest of our life. There's no scale there. You are the same human being in every arena of your lives. And one of the most important things I do with people is help them realize the assets that they have over here in the non-work life are valuable to them in their work life and vice versa. A lot of people kind of silo themselves out and say, I'm a skilled manager or technician or engineer, but I'm not, like, that doesn't translate to, you know, my personal life in important ways. But I've had really powerful moments where people recognize that, you know, parenting a four-year-old is like helping them be an incredible listener for, you know, managing a team of, you know, new recruits or hires and giving them permission to kind of channel the energy that they have in different areas of their lives to areas where they haven't put those skills into play brings people a lot of ease and confidence because they're like, oh yeah, I have to change the context. You know, I have to change maybe the languaging around some of these processes, but fundamentally these skill sets are transferable. And so I think that's a great way to unlock a lot of potential and authenticity here. I'm using air quotes. Right. It's like, just be more of who you already are. Give yourself permission to show up with that magic that makes you Chris to your friends with your team, right? With the boundaries and social norms at work still in place. They don't have to be mutually exclusive, right? And I think that that's something that when you give people creative license to explore that concept, then you get them thinking about a lot of ways they can bring more of themselves to their role. In a way that doesn't cross professional boundaries, in a way that doesn't need to be performative. It's just in a way that like what is your essence, your personality that you want to bring more of and the skill that comes along with all the ways you're effective in your life. If you're really effective in one area and you're not in another, or you don't believe you are, I would invite you to question that and think about the ways you could actually pull some of that talent into that underutilized area.
Right. I need you talking to more of the leaders in the army that I worked with, because it does become performative for a lot of them on some ways. You would see them in front of soldiers acting one way, but then as soon as they, you know, let their hair out, I guess, or let their hair down rather, they're completely different. It's like, oh, I can joke with you. Like, I feel like when we're super stressed in the office, that joke would have gone a long way, right? For helping everybody just kind of rally. Yeah. Amazing.
And everybody feels it, right? You're not fooling anybody when they see you in that different mode. And people, there's this whole debate on like character versus competence. I don't actually think it's a debate. There's pretty solid research that shows this, that most people think that leadership is about competence. It's about skill and ability. But really engaging leadership is about character. It's about like who you are as a person and how you show up. Because character is what's going to get people to follow you, not your competence. Because especially if you're leading with your competence, that means you need to be the most skilled person in the room in order to stay secure in your role. And if somebody on your team is really talented and good, you're going to resent their rise in the organization. You're not going to want to promote them. You're not going to even develop their talent because it's a threat to your security as a leader. Whereas if you're leading from character, from like who you are, from those authentic resources that you have, nobody can threaten that because it's unique to you. And if somebody's better at this thing, this particular skill than you are, God bless. That's awesome. You have a rock star on your team. Now you can unleash their full talent and potential, maybe even get them further in their career than you might be able to go with that specific skill on your own. It's a totally different mindset to leadership. And that's one of the things that ties people up when they think they need to be this, you know, drill sergeant here and then this person over here. They tend to lean too much into the competence side of leadership because they don't feel like they have permission to bring the charismatic side, and they over rely on the things that make them good in that specific role.
Right. I think it was Mark Manson had a good, good quote, just differentiating character with competence, where competence is very much like what you're doing in front of people, like four people and stuff, character being what you would be doing no matter what, right? But even when no one's watching. Yeah. But with competence, people, you get paid, right? Like financially, like for competence. With character, you're getting paid through like love and appreciation and these other things that are way more fulfilling inside. And so why wouldn't you want to lean into character more and get some of those things to actually feel good about yourself? Obviously, competence on some level, so you're putting food on the table. But the character drive, I think, is something that a lot of people are missing that can go a long way in actually setting you up as a great leader. I mean, it's the pivotal moment, like thing you need for a leader. Mm-hmm. And often neglected.
And it can get you paid. They like make them
right.
Click, right? Like,
yeah.
Because people want to work for and with people that they enjoy. And so if you're coming in like all skill, all competence, but you like don't mesh with the team, they're not going to hire you. They're going to bring in somebody who they can train, they can upskill, who they actually like to work with, because that's the non-transferable skill. Like if Gabe's a little rough on
right.
PowerPoint, we can help him with that, right? He's great with this other stuff that matters more to us. It's it's not like you only get paid for your competence, because that's
right.
A lot of times teams are going to train you on things that they need from you.
Right. No, this is actually, I just got assigned to a new team within the Army Reserve, and I was put in charge of a project, and I realized when I was sitting down with my new team that they're all kind of reporting to me in a way. They're all better at their jobs than I am. Like every last one of them, super smart. And I'm just like, man, this is going to like, it's going to be a fun project to be able to like pull everything from these guys. But I was selected to do it mainly because of the character, I think, probably some competence. I'm not completely incompetent. Don't want to, but less like it's so much more obvious to me how I have all these experts in everything that they're doing. And I just get to work with them and kind of empower them.
Yeah.
And it's way more fun.
And now your role has shifted from having the answers as what makes you valuable. Now you're valuable because of your ability to help them find the answers. It's your ability to ask the questions or bring the team together or find the ways that those different experts mesh into, you know, Voltron up into something greater than their parts. That's your new value to the team. And I think that's a hard pivot for people to make in a lot of cases, because they've been led to believe their whole lives that they're valuable for their ability to answer questions. It's how we grade students on tests, right? But when you've reached the level of leadership that you're describing, it's no longer your job to have the answer to everything. It's your job to help inspire the curiosity and resources of others to drive that conversation farther than you could on your own.
Yeah, definitely. So I want to shift gear a bit before we start to wind down, because I want to talk about the use of psychedelics in coaching and some of the practices that you're kind of using there.
Yeah. Well, this is a bit of a different arena than some of my corporate work, although I can tell you there's a lot of curiosity among high-level leadership, senior business leaders, people you would not expect to have these conversations with. They come to me, you know, privately or at the networking dinner after the workshop, and I get asked a lot about this stuff. So I do think it's important to come out of the psychedelic closet, as it were, and really kind of share that I'm doing this work, even though I just want to make it clear it's not part of the stuff I do inside of most organizations and teams. This is stuff that happens, you know, with private citizens in retreats in places where it's legal, like Colorado, where I live. So we're very lucky to have that legal framework that supports access. And I think the really powerful thing about psychedelics is that they can help us understand so much about ourselves that's happening outside of our rational mind. I'm very like right-brained, you know, organized, kind of driven by structure. And the parts of me that I can access with psychedelics are much more in that like mysterious kind of yin, like creative left brain space, thinking more with my heart and my gut than with my head. It's a phase change. It's this huge shift in perspective to be able to travel from that executive functioning part of our minds to that deeper emotional, intuitive part of our being to really understand what's kind of going on. That's an incredible resource. And I don't know of anything that works like as quickly as psychedelics can. Now, that doesn't translate to everybody either. I like to say I'm not a psychedelic evangelist. I'm an advocate, but I think that there's a lot of enthusiasm and kind of froth in the space that needs to be tempered with some understanding of risk and some expectation setting that like one of my mentors calls it the dude wears my breakthrough syndrome, where like, you know, you see this is the dude wears my car, but it's not in the movie. But like everybody's seen, you know, Fantastic Fungi or read about this research about all these breakthrough treatments for depression and everything. And psychedelics are not going to produce the same outcomes for everyone. And I work specifically in the area known as the betterment of well people. That's from the Human Potential Institute. And so I like working with people who already have a solid foundation in their lives. They're mentally healthy. They're just seeking to understand their kind of map their soul, for lack of a better word, to kind of understand who they are at a greater level, their place in the universe, their connection to the world around them. Those are the type of people I find I have a lot of success with in supporting. Not so much the people who are working to heal trauma or treat mental illness with psychedelics, which given my training and background isn't really something I'm qualified to do. But I work with a network of specialists who I can refer out to. If somebody is kind of coming to me with those specific issues, I know plenty of people who can support them with those.
Right. Well, awesome. All right. I want to hit you with three more questions. I'm actually really excited for this first one. Because I think, well, we'll just get into it. What book do you think everyone should read?
Ooh, I have two. The first one is called The Book by Alan Watts. Alan Watts is one of my favorite philosophers. It's a book called The Book on the Taboo Against Knowing Who You Really Are. That is a great book as a primer of spiritual and personal development. It's incredible. And the other one that I really love is called 4,000 Weeks by Oliver Berkman. Which the subtitle is Time Management for Mortals. And it's billed as a time management book, but it's actually much more than that. It's a book about prioritization and giving your life meaning and finding ways to create the most value from your time. And spoiler alert, 4,000 weeks is how long you live if you're lucky enough to be like 82 years old or something. So that doesn't, yeah, I know that look on your face. Yeah, that same thing happened to me when I picked up that book.
Getting close.
Yeah, exactly. But it's really helpful for putting a lot of the tools that you get through that coaching process. We were talking about purpose and identity. That book helps you crystallize it into action. You're like, all right, what am I going to do with this now?
Awesome. And that's why I was excited for to ask you that question, because I think you would have a different perspective than a lot of people that I ask. And so, and you met the expectations. So awesome.
Yeah, they're great reads.
Yes. So what's next for you professionally?
I really want to do more speaking and workshops and leading events. I've been doing a lot of one-on-one coaching for many years now, and I love the energy of a group process. I have a personal goal to give a TEDx talk within a year. So we'll see if Gabe is listening to this in the future, if I've fulfilled on that objective or not. But yeah, I really want to focus on more retreats, more trainings, more of those big group processes, because there's an energy emerges when people are learning and experiencing something together as a group that's really special and unique. And of course, there's a version of it in the one-on-one, but when people are kind of collectively engaging with an idea, it's really, really powerful. And I want to do more of it.
Awesome. And then finally, where can people find you?
They can connect with me on LinkedIn. It's just my name, Gabriel DeRita, DeRita. I also use Instagram occasionally. I go by Fun Gabe, FunGabe. I post a lot about mushrooms and foraging and riding bikes there. And people can find me on my website. EffectiveConnection.com is my website. It's EffectiveConnection.com. And there's a link there if anybody wants to just chat with me. I love meeting new people and sharing ideas. There's a link there that anybody can just book a chunk of my time whenever they want to connect for any reason, no strings attached.
Yeah, awesome. We'll get those in the show notes. Gabe, it was a great conversation. Thanks for joining.
Yeah, thanks, my friend. I appreciated your time and enthusiasm and getting me on the show. I know it was a bit of a juggling act to get it scheduled. So.
Yeah, we made it work.
If you enjoyed today's episode, I would love a rating and review on your favorite podcast player. And for more information on how to build effective and efficient teams through your leadership, visit leadingforeffect.com. As always, deserve it.